From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. For today's episode, we're diving deep into the North Korean economy and trying to parse out how trade and sanctions could be having an impact on North Korea's decision-making. For this discussion, I spoke with trade expert Bill Brown, who is a non-resident fellow here at KEI and also teaches at Georgetown University. I do have to note that this episode was recorded after our event on the topic a few weeks ago here at KEI, which is available to watch on the KEI YouTube channel. But what that means is that it was recorded before the major announcement that President Trump may meet with Kim Jong-un in May. So unfortunately, we don't cover that specifically, but considering that Bill argues that sanctions enforcement by China has only really begun to bite in the last 3 or so months, right before Kim Jong-un made his major overtures to Seoul and Washington, I do think it's a very interesting and a very relevant discussion. So please enjoy and do feel free to let us know what you think of this or any of our episodes on social media. We are at Korea Econ Inst on Twitter and Instagram, and search for Korea Economic Institute on Facebook. Please enjoy this episode and let us know what you think. All right. So, Bill, thank you so much for not only coming and speaking on the podcast here today, but also for a really great event. And I highly recommend people go on our YouTube channel. We have the full thing. But thank you for your time and for sharing your insights with me.
Yeah, it's very fun for me to do that. And it's really an interesting time on North Korea, as we all know.
Yeah, so I want to start off, you're a non-resident fellow here at KEI and have written many blogs for us, particularly on the subject of China-North Korea trade. So I know you mentioned that there are some new numbers out, and I want to get to that in a minute, but can you give us kind of the general trend, or how has the trade been looking, especially as we've seen multiple new rounds of sanctions in the last couple of years?
Yeah. You know, there's kind of a misinterpretation of North Korea that's kind of everybody thinks about. It's kind of a book written long, long ago called Hermit Kingdom, talking about Korea back 100 years ago as being this isolated country without much relations with anybody. And now we tend to use that for North Korea, and we call it a Hermit Kingdom. My view, that's really a big misnomer, because North Korea has been heavily engaged over its whole history with different groups of countries. Starts with Soviet Union, Eastern Europe. China is sort of the one country after the Korean War that's sort of persistently a big player. But other countries too. Japan has been a big partner, trade partner, South Korea. The Europeans, West Europeans, were big trading partners. The one country that has not traded with North Korea appreciably is the United States. So it sort of makes sense that we think of North Korea as a hermit, but it's not really the right attitude, I don't think. I say that, though, thinking now in 2018 that North Korea is becoming a hermit. Why? Well, over the years, it's kind of made enemies, economic enemies, out of all of its partners. It doesn't pay its debts. The Soviet Union fell apart. That wasn't its fault, but that subtracted a lot of its trade. With Europe, it borrowed a lot of money, never paid it back. South Korea has given it a lot of money and not, and the North Koreans have not acted nicely as a result. U.S. has given them a lot of billions of dollars of food aid and heavy fuel, all kinds of stuff. They don't treat us very well. So, and then, of course, these nuclear sanctions, which really, to me, only really started hitting North Korea late last year when China stepped to the plate.
So talk a little bit more about that. What has China done to really step up to the plate, as you say, and how do you know that it's really affecting North Korea now?
Yeah, that's a great questions. Because these sanctions have been going on. I think most of us are tired of them. This is like the 9th or 10th. I can't even keep count how many rounds of. And it's funny, our government, whether it's Obama or Trump, it's always the toughest ever sanctions, right? It's almost the same press release.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in a way, it's true because they are on top of other sanctions. So in a way, they are toughest ever. But we're all kind of tired of the sanctions. A couple of years ago, I was thinking sanctions were not working. Most of us thinking not working. China has sort of paid lip service to the UN sanctions all along. Kind of a little bit surprisingly at times. But they've never really cut into their trade with North Korea. A few things, they've sanctioned North Korean entities, military or nuclear entities. They've been helpful that way. But not the economy as a whole, the way we want them to do. So China over time then has become the huge dominant trade player with North Korea. Yeah, 91%, I figured looking at mirror trade data, partner trade data, in 2016, it was 91% of all North Korea's foreign trade was with China. So if China is not playing the role in saying it's ridiculous for us even to try. I mean, it's like maybe it's like Russia sanctioning Mexico when we're fully engaged with Mexico. It just doesn't work. But point is, and I don't think it's our politics, a little bit our politics, but mostly North Korean actions, I think they caught China flat-footed. China has always seemed to be kind of not thinking North Korea can really do these things. Oh, they can't do a nuclear weapon. They're too poor. They can't do an ICBM. That's too expensive. Well, in the last year, we've seen a lot of this. And I think the Chinese have finally caught on what we've known for years, that North Korea is hell-bent on nuclear weapons and missiles. Now, China may have been sort of cleverly pretending like it's kind of like by avoiding seeing it, they make us do the heavy work. That's kind of what they're thinking. The rest of the world has been that way. South Korea has been very much that way. Oh, we don't see any mess in North Korea. You see it, you fix it. That's the tough role that the U.S. has had to play for years and years. We've had to be the bad guy because we think they're doing nuclear weapons. Well, I think everybody else knows that. They just want to put it on us. But it all changed to me in about November last year. Of course, this election here, but even before that, the UN, North Korea did a big nuclear test and a missile test and a UN round of sanctions. At that point, the Chinese stopped talking about just penalizing North Korean military, nuclear, science communities, but they started allowing hitting the economy in general. And from that point on, I think if you look at the data, their trade has plummeted. Their imports from North Korea have plummeted.
So as I mentioned, you saw some new data recently, the latest numbers. Can you talk a little bit about what that shows?
And it's not surprising, actually. The maybe surprising numbers were a month ago, the December numbers. China is very good. They publish data very quickly, faster than we do. So yesterday they put out very detailed commodity, huge detail of trade with all the world. And, of course, North Korea is one of their partners. So they publish all this data on their trade with North Korea in huge detail as of the end of January, which is just a few weeks old, if you think about it. It's very quick reporting. That showed a continuation of the December data, sort of confirmation of the December data. Well, I have the number. It's a $36.4 million of imports from North Korea. Well, if you think about it, that is almost nothing for a country's trade. It's about 85% less than January a year ago. Trade, jumps around month to month. You have to look at it seasonally adjusted, or the equivalent month. So January to January is a good way to look at it, and like an 85% reduction in China's imports. In other words, North Korea's exports. That's how North Korea makes money, is exporting. The only reason to export is to make money, and then you make the money and use that money to buy something. So North Korea's ability to buy something has shrunk dramatically. As I say, beginning in November, or October, November last year, but continuing now, it's really hitting the skids.
So one thing that you've written about a lot and talked about a lot is the exchange rate and the price of certain commodities within North Korea. as a way to follow how much impact sanctions are having. So can you give us that general picture?
Yeah, it's a very interesting issue, and it's one that's rather perplexing in a way. The problem is a good analyst can figure out an answer for everything, so I'm probably guilty of doing that. But I would have guessed 3 months ago, if I saw these kind of numbers coming out, I would have thought that the North Korean $1 exchange rate would fall. In other words, what's happening is presumably North Koreans are not earning as many dollars as they expect. They're continuing to import from China kind of the same amount, although January numbers were a little surprising and they dropped 30%, a pretty big jump from January. So now I think their ability to buy Chinese goods is finally starting to drop. That's the real impact on the local economy, is the imports. We think exports, but actually it's the imports. Because if they're not getting oil, if they're not getting food, if they're not getting whatever, machine parts I think is the critical thing for them, it's having an impact on their own economy. But that's a delayed impact, because up through last year they were importing fine. Now I think we're starting to see the turn where their imports start dropping. Now that would usually, two things would happen in kind of in contradiction to each other. The exchange rate should change. People want dollars. There's a shortage of dollars. See what I mean? Because they're not earning the dollars, there's a shortage of dollars. So the shortage of dollars would cause them to trade their yuan, their own currency, and buy more dollars. That would raise the price of dollar and lower the price of yuan. That's what would happen in a pure market. Now, exchange rates are never a pure market in any country, and countries like to try to fix them. We complain all the time about China fixing exchange rate or whatever. You can do that. There are different methods for doing that. You can just command it. North Korea used to just command it. We will only allow. But their command rate is like 131 North Korean per dollar. The markets say, no, we don't believe that. It's 8,000 won per dollar. I mean, a huge difference. So there's, if you have a dollar, you're not going to change it for 130 if you can go over here and change it for 8,000. So the command rate doesn't work. So I would have expected that rate to go from like 8,000 won. Remember, that's a dollar buying 8,000 won to something like 20,000. A dollar could buy 20,000 won. So the dollar would be much more valuable. That hasn't happened. It's been very interesting the last 3 years how stable the North Koreans have kept that exchange rate. As I say, it's not something I would have predicted, but I think I can maybe explain it.
Okay, would you? What do you think? How is that possible?
Well, several explanations. One is if you look at it's all about monetary policy. So how much yuan is out there? It's a dollar-yuan exchange rate, so you have to look at dollars and you have to look at yuan, both of them. So if they want to raise the value of the yuan to keep up with the dollar, to keep that even, they have to restrict the supply of yuan. And that's what a central bank does by limiting credit. Money is actually credit, if you think about it. A paper yuan is credit from the bank. So I think the North Korean central monetary authorities are being excruciatingly conservative in printing yuan, trying to keep that. My guess is even they've aimed it because in recent months, according to defector reporting, which I think is pretty good, that rate has been exactly held at 8,000 won, not budging. Well, last week it went up 80-50. Okay, well, essentially 8,000 won. So that means to me something is intervening, and it's probably the central bank saying, we're going to keep that rate, we're going to intervene, buy yuan, buy dollars, you know, play in this market and keep it at 8,000. The impact of that, though, if the central bank is not giving credit, what if a state enterprise, big borrowers in North Korea, not people, but the state enterprises, that means the state enterprise can't borrow money. So there's some real impacts on the state enterprises, I'm thinking. I can't prove that, but I'm guessing if you're a state enterprise in North Korea right now and you want to borrow some money, you're not going to get it. If you can't borrow the money, how are you going to pay your workers? If you're running into deficit, you're in real trouble. If you've been selling textiles to China, China just put the brakes on textiles per the UN sanctions. According to the data, China imported virtually no textiles in January. Well, what if you're a textile plant in Pyongyang? How are you making money? I think you're in big trouble, actually.
So is your prediction that this is just the beginning, or do you think North Korea will be able to find a way to once again figure out how to continue surviving?
There's always a solution, and there's several different, ways to go about it. Of course, what we would all hope was North Korea, in fact, Kim kind of has the keys. He can turn off this whole thing with just one word. Okay, we're going to stop our nuclear program. Bam, everything, sanctions would be gone. That's probably not going to happen. But it is important to remember that Kim probably thinks he can, if he really needs to, he can change the game. He's got that button. He's got maybe a nuclear button. He's also got non-nuclear button. And the non-nuclear button, he might think can save his economy. He's not ready to play that yet, but it's an option for him. But other ways, what I would suggest to him is kind of do the Chinese route, where if the North Korean government, it's a socialist government, communist government, which basically owns the whole country, if you think about it. It's a terrible system because the state ownership means people use the capital of the country, the land of the country, like it's public property, and they use it very badly, wastefully badly. So what the Chinese have done since Deng Xiaoping days, 30 years ago, they've been gradually privatizing state property, selling it off, license, not just property, but licensing, gradually taking the state out of the picture, selling it to private Chinese interests. If North Korea could conceivably do the same, sell its property to North Korean interests. By selling the property, it gets more yuan in. It doesn't have to create credit. It can pay yuan. It can finance itself by selling property. It's kind of like a bankruptcy workout, if you think about it. It's really not insolvent. North Korea's not insolvent. They've got all these assets. They're illiquid. They can't sell them. So I would basically argue they could sort of gradually, like the Chinese have done, sort of gradually sell the state to the private. Private sector makes much better productivity use of the assets, the economy grows, everything is kind of okay, except what's not okay. By selling the assets, the North Korean government loses control. And they've resisted that tremendously for 65 years. Something has to happen there that makes them willing to lose some of that control.
Do you think, given that up until relatively recently, up until Kim Jong-un took power, they were not willing to relinquish control over markets and the economy at all, do you think that the fact that they have allowed black markets is a sign that they may do something along the lines of what you're saying?
So I wouldn't even call them black markets anymore. I think they're pretty legal markets. And it goes way back to Kim Il-sung, the grandfather. He made a statement about 1960. Famous statement in North Korea. He said, farmers' markets, they are the death knell of socialism. Someday, we'll get rid of them. But even in 1960, he couldn't get rid of all the money in markets. So in the last 20 years, these have grown, especially after the famine, they've grown continuously. And now, I don't know what share of the economy, but they're a big share. That means the economy works at two different sets of prices, which if you think about it is extremely inefficient. So you have one price of labor in the state. If you're working for a Pyongyang textile mill, you might get 3,000 won per month, plus a lot of your rations, cheap food, cheap housing, for what it's worth. If you're in the market side, working for maybe a Chinese invested company, you get paid maybe 300,000 won per month, 100 times more, but none of the perks. So you sort of make these, actually you don't have these choices very much. On the margin, people are gravitating toward the market side, again, hurting the state side. So I'm thinking this is a real trouble for the state economy.
So I just have one final question, and this is something that is also a big change, I would say, in the last couple of years. The U.S. going after some Chinese entities, mm-hmm. specifically calling out people, sanctioning them for their business with North Korea or their ties to North Korea. Do you think that has any impact, or do you think that will add on to the sanctions regime or make any sort of significant change, continuing with maybe this trend that you're seeing, the sanctions really biting mm-hmm. now?
I'd be pretty cautious with that, mainly because to me the important actor here is not us, it's China. China has been acting better than we could have expected in the last year. So somehow we have to keep them on the same page. It's not impossible because I think China in many ways has the same objectives we do. China's objective is to keep North Korea stable. While we don't want a war, we kind of want an unstable North Korea to make it change. But basically, I think we think North Korea is inherently unstable the way it is, with these two different economies working against each other. Hopefully, Chinese are beginning to see it the same way and recognizing that North Korea has to reform, has to change. So as long as China's on board with that idea and we don't aggravate them somewhere else, like South China Sea or something else, I think Chinese policies are going to make this happen. But if we're too pushy, the secondary sanctions, after all, would not be needed if China were doing its own work. I think I would, but clearly, people break rules. In our country, I wouldn't be surprised if some American companies are breaking sanctions. So no country can totally police its own companies. So hopefully here what is going on, and I think there's some evidence of it, that we're detecting some anomalies and we're telling the Chinese government that company in China isn't behaving right. And hopefully the Chinese government might be saying, well, we can't hit it, you hit it. So hopefully there's a lot of cooperation there. I would not be too heavy on the Chinese right now because I think they're doing the right thing.
Okay. Before we go, is there anything else that you think it's important to say? Any closing thoughts?
I guess one thing I neglected to say is, why is North Korea the way it is? Over time, the rest of the world, less so the U.S., but mostly the Soviet Union, Russia, mostly China, Western Europe, Japan, even South Korea, and to some extent us, we've been afraid of North Korea, so we've given them stuff. North Korea has been the recipient of huge volumes of foreign aid, and it's kind of like blood money. It's sort of, we'll give you rice so you don't attack. Constant aid to North Korea. They've never exported more than they've imported, as far as I can tell. Well, if you think about it, that's terrible for the local economy. They can't export because there's too much dumping going on, too much foreign goods coming in. So we've really strangled, the rest of the world has strangled North Korea. In that sense, even Kim Jong-un, I won't support Kim Jong-un. But he's in a very difficult situation. The solution is reforms. Reforms like creating a private economy. I think by doing that, they'll realize they don't need nuclear weapons. Who's going to attack North Korea? Nobody's going to attack North Korea. They've invented this idea, we're going to attack them. They may have designs on South Korea. That's the real trouble. That's why we can't just sit back and let them have nuclear weapons. They won't use them, but they can use them as a threat. We're going to blow up Seoul if you don't do this. That's the big danger. So we have to be ready to push back all fronts. I like this idea of maximum pressure to prevent them from doing any stupid acts. For example, when they sank that South Korean ship back 2010, they should have been hammered for that. They weren't. They've gotten used to not being hammered. So we need to change that. They need to be afraid of what's going to happen when they do nasty things, when they treat their people badly, their repercussions. So I would argue that full-fledged pressure is useful, but with the idea of changing North Korea, not for taking it over.
Okay. Thank you again for your time, both here on the podcast and with our event today, and for being our non-resident fellow, having great work on the KEI blog as well.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us here on Korean Context. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Please remember to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you're getting your podcasts. And do check out some of our other content. KEI does have a blog, blog.keia.org. And we're posting all kinds of content there, as well as on our Twitter, which is KoreaEconInst. Thank you again for joining us, and we hope to see you again next week.